Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Independent publishers have existed since the 19th century. It wasn't until the 20th and the 21st that we really saw the industry dominated by a few corporations. Those big publishers, Simon & Schuster, Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, for example, they've grown big by buying up small publishers. Independent publishers, though, are the ones who make literature a commodity in the first place, or perhaps supply the demand that already existed. Increasingly, small and independent publishers are picking up prizes and acclaim, and one such publishing house is right here in central Wisconsin. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. The University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point's Cornerstone Press is just one of two university presses in the state. The other is in Madison. Participating students publish just a handful of books each year, handling everything from author acquisition to marketing and more. But what's the impact for students, local authors, and readers? Joining me today are three representatives from Cornerstone Press for an inside look at the changing world of publishing. Dr. Ross Tengedal, who is director of the UWSP Cornerstone Press program and serves as publisher-in-chief, is here today. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is McKenna Rentmeester, this year's director of operations at Cornerstone. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Tori Schuler, who is this year's marketing director. She's also in the studio. Welcome, Tori.
Hi, thank you.
We'll take your calls and questions, too. You can join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. I'd like to start with a brief history of Cornerstone Press. When did it start? How did that all unfold?
Sure. So University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point's Department of English has had a long history of dedicating part of its curriculum to publishing, and specifically to students being engaged in that publishing process. So Mary Croft had a class in 1979 where students would make their own chapbooks of poetry. And so the publishing class started like that. My predecessor, Dan Dieterich, took over the press in 1984 and began what was first called First Class Publishers, but was then renamed Cornerstone Press. And he based his class off of a course at the University of Notre Dame, where students would take part in acquisitions, marketing, production, editing, and create an actual book that they acquired from the market. And so the press has been in continuous operation since 1984. It's been taught. Dan Dieterich was the director for well over 30 years. There have been other directors for shorter periods, but you know, those professors have moved on to other positions or left the profession. So I've been here since 2016, and we used to be a one book a year model. Mm-hmm. So a fall class would be offered called Editing and Publishing, and 23 students would take the course, and they would each have a role within the press, and that was based on Dan's model from 1984. It's been working ever since. But just last year, we decided it was time to expand into mm-hmm. a full year-round 12-month operation with multiple titles, multiple ways of acquiring new texts, different genres. And so now we are a fully functioning 12-month operation with we publish up to 5 books a year, mm-hmm. which is closer to an independent press's output, especially mm-hmm. one that's student-staffed. And essentially, we've been a nice little secret in central Wisconsin for many years. And it's nice that we're now starting to get a little bit of recognition. And really, the students deserve that kind of recognition as well.
So, McKenna and Tori, are you both seniors, or what year are you in school?
I'm actually a senior. I'll be graduating this coming May.
Okay. And what about you?
I am also a senior graduating in May.
All right. Is this your first year with this program, or have you been involved in the publishing in the past?
Yeah, this is actually my first semester being with the press, and it has been one of the greatest experiences that I've had at UWSP, actually. And you don't come into the press knowing what you're going to expect, because it's essentially you're signing up for a class, but it's much more than a class. It's a real life experience, for sure.
Sounds interesting. Tori, is this your first experience as well?
Yeah, this is my first time with the press. It's something I've wanted to do the whole time I've been at the university, but it was previously only offered as a fall course, so I never fit it into my schedule before now. So this is my first time with it as well.
Okay, and Tori, you're going to be the marketing person.
Yes. I am the marketing
director.
So
what does that all entail?
Marketing. So I have a staff of 5 that work with me. So marketing has a social media position. We have a publicity manager who's in charge of working with the author on their public image and doing press releases for us. We have a copywriter who does who writes like the back cover copy for the book and some promotional material for us, a catalog designer that lays out our catalog for all of our books, and an event planner, because one of the really cool things that we do with Cornerstone that gives authors a really great opportunity is that we do a book launch for them.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
Coming up with our new release in December, we're having a big launch event at the university. We bring the author in to be at the university for a few days, do book signings, and we have a big launch party where that's the first time that we sell their book, and it's a really fun opportunity for us to celebrate all the work that we've done in the semester and for the author to really have a spotlight on them for the release of their book.
It sounds a lot like what bigger publishing houses do on a more local scale. That's what it appears like.
It is a really big, grand thing, but it is also a lot more focused on the author. It gives the author a lot more importance than bigger publishing houses do, and it gives us as the staff a lot of importance. So we all really get to come together to celebrate what we've worked so hard for.
Is that really one of the differences between the big publishing houses and a small publishing house like what you're talking about here?
Absolutely. Sure. It's that kind of recognition that we can have for all of us on the staff and for the author.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's important that because we acquire so few manuscripts throughout the year, you know, we're not churning out thousands of books a year like Penguin Random House.
Right? Sure.
And they can only put so much effort into every individual writer. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the time or the staff to do that.
Right.
So because we have a dedicated staff, and I always tell our new authors, our new writers, you have 23 students who are ready to work for you for your book. And so, yes, it's similar to, I don't know if the big houses do things like this. They just don't have the time, and that's not how they operate. So we have a special opportunity to do that with our writers.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, McKenna, you're director of operations, right?
Yes.
What does that mean exactly?
essentially, you know, I kind of oversee all of the students within the class. And they're in our class this fall, there's about 23 students that are currently working on our newest title, which is actually Great Escapes from Detroit by Joseph O'Malley, launching December 5th.
Okay.
So essentially, my role is to oversee the executive staff and then also kind of put out any fires, deal with any discrepancies, but also act as Dr. Tangadol's right hand. So essentially, anything that he can't do or doesn't have enough time to do, I kind of take on. Me and my chief of staff, Olivia Fromey, have actually been working on a fundraiser for our Wisconsin Heritage book title, The Wisconsin Idea, mm-hmm. that is actually launching November 19th.
That's coming up.
Yes, very quickly.
Okay.
we're going to have a launch party on the 19th at UWS Stevens Point in the alumni room. It's going to be a great event. And we're actually launching our fundraiser that's going to go hand in hand with that. And that's a special project that I've been working on for practically the entire semester, along with our newest legacy title. So kind of just really doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff, but also going out and working with the authors. And like I said, just putting out fires and making sure everything runs smoothly.
Okay. A little later on, I'm going to ask you about what this kind of experience is going to do for you later on
graduation. Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Okay.
But I really want to know how university presses are central to the publishing world and what they mean in Wisconsin's landscape, really.
Sure. Well, and what's unique about us, too, is we are not technically a university press, right? We are a teaching press. So there is a handful of teaching presses throughout the United States, but most of them are master's students or MFA students. So mm-hmm. graduate students staff them. There's only a small amount of undergraduate staffed teaching presses. Teaching press meaning that not only is the press operating and making books, but it's attached directly to the curriculum. So it is a curricular offering first and a independent business second, okay? I would say the national conversation about university presses has been really fascinating lately as well. We know that there's been a lot of defunding through legislatures throughout multiple states, and some of those defunding initiatives come to university presses. And university presses have a responsibility to their institutions, to the missions of their institutions, to help forward knowledge and scholarship and research based on the missions of their universities. So if all university presses were turned into complete money-making ventures like a Penguin Random House, the titles that they would be able to take risks on, they could no longer take those risks. And we're already seeing that constriction in not only the university press world, but also in the publishing world at large. Enter a small undergraduate staffed teaching press that has the ability to take risks because we only publish so many titles a year, and we have a dedicated staff that can make sure that the texts that we're putting out are solid, well done, and will sell. Mm-hmm. It's really important that Central Wisconsin especially has entities like this that provide opportunities for our students who are mostly Central Wisconsin citizens. And that they can take those skills out into the workforce after they graduate.
We're seeing a lot of defunding of these kinds of programs nationwide, and yet Cornerstone Press has expanded. So what allowed for that to happen?
Well, one of the blessings and curses of having an undergraduate teaching press is that our funding model is completely self-generating. So we are a revenue-generating operation, which means we only operate on our sales. We do not have a budget from the university. We never have. And that may change in the future because of our expansion and our continued role within the university. I know that our chancellor has been very vocal in his support for our initiatives, and rightly so. Of course, the Department of English also and the College of Letters and Science very much supporting what we do. So we were able to expand because we were not bound to a university budget. But now in terms of that expansion, it may be time for us to consider something like that.
So how did you decide in which areas to expand? I know that you picked up poetry, for example. Mm-hmm. What drew you to those subjects?
Sure. Well, our legacy series title, which is A New Voice in Fiction, is essentially the prestige book of the press. It's the one that the press has been doing since 1984, essentially. A fall book. That's when people expect the Cornerstone title. So we basically just continue with the fall book tradition, rolling acquisitions. We acquire a text that we feel is right for it, and we print it with our local printer, Warzala Publishing. And so that really part of the class has stayed the same. But there's areas where our faculty were interested in expanding. We have an academic series now called the J. Baird Callicott Environmental Humanities Series. UWSP is known for being the starting point of the subfield called environmental ethics, which is a subfield of philosophy. And so we felt that type of lecture and essay series would be really well suited for our university, and it has been. We have two titles now. A third is in development, and a fourth and fifth are actually in development as of this week. Mm-hmm. So that academic series, which is peer-reviewed, has brought us a new kind of legitimacy, I would say. And then, of course, poetry. There's a lot of poets out there, mm-hmm. and it's hard to get a poetry book published. Poetry, traditionally, is just not a hot seller. Mm-hmm. Books of poetry. So we felt for sure we could do short runs. We mm-hmm. could get good poets that do good work and sell them out, and we've been doing it. We're on our second run of Cassandra Winwalker's The Almost Children, which came out last year. She's from Alaska. And we are currently developing Heather Dubrow from New York City, her collection Lost and Found Departments. So we feel like those areas of expansion have been extremely positive for our press.
Okay. We have to take a break. Dr. Ross Tankadal, McKenna Rentmeester, and Tori Schuler from UWSP's Cornerstone Press are our guests today, discussing the impact of the university's publishing house. When we return, we'll discuss some of the challenges that small publishers are facing in light of changing technology and trends. You can join the conversation, too, at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Dr. Ross Tengadal, McKenna Rentmeester, and Tori Schuler from UWSP's Cornerstone Press, our guests today. We'd love to hear from you, too. The number to call with questions and comments, 800-780-9742. So, McKenna and Tori, from a marketing perspective, actually, let's start with this. Start to finish, what goes on behind the scenes? Take us how this whole thing goes. You start, you're in the program, you have a book. What happens?
A lot. A lot happens. So essentially, we run just like a normal press, but we're just students and we're learning the process and we're doing everything from start to finish. So we acquire a title from an author that has really no connection to the university normally. Like Dr. T had said before, we have authors from Alaska, New York City, all over, featuring, you know, Midwestern writers, you know, content, all of those type of things. So we acquire that title, and then we go through the production of it. We go through the book cover design, the layout of the book, obviously the editing, everything that, you know, a normal publisher would do. And hopefully, you know, we get it in by our deadline. Yeah. We're actually doing really, really well with getting our next legacy title to our publisher on time. So it's going really, really smoothly, and we've been really happy with the progress. But going after editing, and once we have our book cover done, we are working on getting proofs. We're working on people to review it, obviously, and get some good reviews out to really support our author and really kind of get his image out there and help him promote his book. And then, like Tori had said before, we have our launch at the end of the semester, and everybody can breathe a sigh of relief, I would say.
A big, giant one, I would imagine.
Oh, of course.
Right. Right. What about from a marketing standpoint? I mean, what do you need from start to finish? Does it start when you first get that author, or does the marketing come in later?
Marketing is kind of a 365 days a year thing, because we're not just concerned with marketing, you know, what we are currently working on. We also market our back titles, things that we've done before. So like a first priority that I had coming in as the marketing director this semester was to get working on promoting our previous legacy series titles so we can really build that as a brand, as a series that we're running. And then as soon as we start getting a sense of what we're doing with our current book, then we start marketing that as well. That was a really exciting part of the process for me when we were designing covers was a really fun part of the class for
really?
Everybody. The production team did amazing
phenomenal
work with that. We had so many cover designs to look at, trying to find something that fit the book. And then me in marketing, everyone I looked at, I'm like, what can I do with that? What materials could I put together with that cover? How would that look if I was putting that out to people? So the whole thing is just a really exciting process.
It sounds like there's a lot more to it than I would have ever imagined. You know, when it comes to the thought process that goes behind it, I'm really curious how you choose your manuscripts. How do you find your authors? Do they come to you? Do you reach out to them? And then do you have a flood of them that you have to decide on? I mean, how does that work?
We do. So we take rolling submissions for manuscripts for our legacy series. So we get them year round. And then for this year, we had 85 manuscript submissions for this.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do manuscript selection, we'll look at cover letters from authors and try to see. A big part of it isn't even necessarily reading the manuscripts, because obviously we can't read 85 manuscripts.
Right.
But looking at the authors, we're really concerned with the people that we're working with and making sure that they're someone who's going to work well with our model. We like working with authors who have been published either limited times before or who haven't been published before. We like to give people their first opportunity to have a book out. That's a really great feeling for us. And then also authors who are going to be receptive to working with students, because we are all students on the staff. We can't just throw everything to Dr. Tang et al. To deal with. We are actively working with the authors, and they need to be understanding that we are professionals. We are working hard to do this book for them. So that's a really important thing that we look for.
So how involved are the authors then in the whole process?
Oh, very involved. Very,
yes.
Very involved.
So involved. Because one of the first parts of the process for us is editing. And the editorial team goes through the manuscript and is in constant communication with the author, looking at all the possible changes we could make to the book, from little editing things, you know, correcting, but also big changes to the manuscript sometimes. The books that we've been putting out in our legacy series are short story collections, and looking at making bolder changes, like rearranging the order of the stories in the collection. And that's something that we've had really great luck with our authors being receptive on as well, our creative ideas as well as theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you've ever had to deal with authors who had perhaps unreasonable expectations, or maybe were difficult in other ways? How does that come into play, and how do you deal with that?
In my time, that does not happen. And it will not happen as long as I am the director and publisher of the press. Tori hit it right on the head. It's not always the quality of the manuscript. It's the quality of the person who's writing the manuscript. And you can learn a lot about a person by their materials, by the way they write, by the way they present themselves. And we have – I wouldn't say we've been lucky. We have been very selective in who we want to publish. Mm-hmm. And we have just been so, for lack of a better word, blessed to have – people that are willing to work with students, people that are willing to do it in a shorter time frame, people that are willing to be receptive to this type of teaching model. I'm very protective of my staff. I will not allow my staff to be taken advantage of or treated as anything but professionals, because that's what they are.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting because, well, I'm an MFA student myself, and, I know my fellow students in my program are always looking for these opportunities, and it's interesting to know that there are programs like this that really encourage that back and forth, that relationship where the authors can give as much to you as you can give to the authors.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. I'm curious, what presses in American university presses have been really resilient. As we mentioned earlier, that there are some challenges with funding. You have a little bit of a different funding model than many of these. Mm-hmm. But what do you see university publishing looking like in 20 years? Will it be different from what we see today?
Sure. I mean, and again, this is certainly, you know, my perspective, and I'm certainly, I don't run a university press, but of course I have friends and colleagues who run university presses, who've been published by university presses. So purely anecdotally from my perspective, the university press model is going through a lot of changes. Before, a lot of university presses were able to be much more, again, risky, and they could take more challenging texts and try different things with their writers. And some university presses, the big ones, are still able to do that. Certainly, they're still able. You know, your Oxford University Press, Cambridge University Press, you know, certainly they're able to do those things. But some of the smaller mid-size university presses, for instance, that is where things are changing so much that we're losing them, or they're becoming part of another press. Maybe they get bought out, or they get partnered with another press. And so therefore, people are the university presses are trying to create series that matter to their readerships, as any publisher would do. But when you ask how will it look in some years, we're not going to have very many university presses that are able to operate if their funding models continue to be cut and removed and changed to more of a completely revenue-based model. Only so many are going to be able to survive, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, McKenna, you're director of operations. Tori, you're in marketing. What other roles are there in this program?
So we kind of operate with an executive staff that runs each department. So as you had said, Tori's our marketing director, and she heads up our marketing department. Kind of like my right hand, also a very close colleague of mine, Olivia Fromey. She is my chief of staff, and she oversees a lot of the budget issues. She's actually currently writing a few proposals for the press, working very closely with our chancellor, doing a lot of exciting things to help us expand. And then we have our production department, which is headed by Heidi Probson, and she works with our production department to do layouts, cover designs, everything that goes essentially in the book, on the book, kind of the book itself, essentially. And then our editor-in-chief, Jeremy Wolf, he has been working with Joseph O'Malley, I think, since last May, if I'm not mistaken. He's been...
Correct.
He's been doing really, really well, communicating with him a lot, working on making the book as good as it can be. And we actually just added another story to the book as we're, you know, getting it ready to go to the printer this week.
3 days ago.
Yes.
3 days ago.
Three days ago.
Okay,
so
that's pretty quick.
Oh, yes. But Jeremy is great. He's been doing a really, really great job making sure his department is meeting all of their deadlines. And within each department, there's about 5 students, I would say, and they all have their own role. Within the press, we have a lot of different areas that we like to cover. And like we said, we are trying to run as close as we can to those big presses. And we're trying to keep expanding our model as much as we can. And obviously, we cannot forget about our very dedicated sales staff. That is headed by Brendan Gallert. He is doing a phenomenal job. We've actually been to a couple events recently, and he's been really doing a great job of making sure that we have enough back stock and we are pricing things appropriately. And again, we're all undergrads. Mm-hmm. So we all come from very different backgrounds. I know that I'm a communications media studies major.
Okay.
And I've been really blessed to land this position because English is very near and dear to my heart. And we have a lot of different students that come from a lot of different backgrounds, which adds something special to the press.
Right, because the class is actually within the English department at the university. So a lot of the students that take the course are going to be English majors or English education majors. But then we get people from different fields. We've got philosophy majors, history majors, education majors, business majors, all coming into the course. So it's a really interesting mix of people, even though the course is in the English department.
Mm-hmm. So you do have a variety of people who are in this that are they're not going to be book publishers when they when they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear a lot about hands-on learning, that you know, how important that is. So to you both, why is getting this hands-on experience so important to you?
Well, the way I like to think of it is it's definitely an experiential learning process. It's something different and something that puts you outside of your comfort zone. I know a lot of us didn't imagine, you know, I mean, that we would be working with an author and putting out a book in 4 months. It's just something that you don't think about when you're in college. And so talking to fellow students that obviously don't have any connection to the English department, they're all kind of like, well, what is Cornerstone Press? And it's really exciting to be able to go out and talk to people and help them understand how special it is and how it is going to be a major influence around campus. And it is, like we have said, we're rapidly expanding. And it's been a great process. And being able to really get some hands-on learning with communications and learning all the different aspects that go into how to make a book is really, really cool and really interesting.
Yeah, our graphic designer, or our producer actually, was the graphic designer for 2006 titles, Misadventures and The Soul of the Place. And that actually influenced her career path. That encouraged her to pursue a second major in graphic design.
Yeah.
I mean, she went a whole different way. She launched a journalism career.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you see students in this program go on to take careers in publishing or journalism that
Absolutely.
Maybe otherwise wouldn't have?
Sure. Well, my first editor-in-chief, Natalie Vonasek, she works for a business publisher in South Florida. So she's a managing editor down there, doing well for herself. We're very proud. Another, Lexi Neely, works for Little Free Library in Hudson, Wisconsin as a business associate. She's able to work with literacy and expanding their operations. And she's enjoying that. We have lots of students who end up as copywriters, copy editors, content editors, you know, a lot of those freelancing positions. It's hard to say, though, exactly how many of our students have benefited from this press. There's an untold amount of students who have taken something from what they've done and created another opportunity for themselves. And I think that's one thing that's lost in some of our conversations about the university. It's that it's okay for students if they don't have a dedicated career path. It's okay if they are at least given the skills to create their own career path. And certainly the Cornerstone Press is one of those places where you learn so much about so many different things that you're able to basically make your own way if you really want to. And that's something I try to impress upon our students and our staff.
With people from such different backgrounds, students from such different backgrounds that are in the program, how do you decide who does what? How are those roles assigned?
That is really on a voluntary basis. First day of class, showed up.
It seems so long ago, actually.
Yes. First day of class, you know, we show up, we talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing during the semester, but then it's really just kind of a survey of interest. What do you want to work in? So, I mean, I became the marketing director just by saying, yeah, I'd be interested in that. And I have a little bit of experience with, you know, some online advertising and working with social media. And I would like to lead that team. Mm-hmm. And that's how it
came to be. Doctor, you didn't say you're going to do this, you're going to do this.
I instituted an application process 2 years ago.
Okay.
And so it's not just like heads up, seven up, who wants to be the president, you know?
Could you imagine? That'd be kind of funny.
That's pretty much how I ran it for the first year. I'm like, oh my, this is so strange. So we have an application process for the executive team. I mean, Tori's anecdote had to do with nobody applied for the marketing director position.
Okay.
And I'm glad Tori ended up taking on the responsibilities because she's done a bang-up job.
Mm-hmm.
But someone like McKenna applied for the position after I told her the semester prior, I hear good things about you. I think you need to do this. And she goes, okay. And so she sent in her application and stuff. So in a way, and no, it's not me telling you you're doing this. It's hopefully finding students and understanding their interests and seeing their potential. And if I've had them in class before, I can have a sense of who they are and what they can handle. And sometimes finding those students that they just – there's untapped potential in them. And they just need to be given the right opportunity at the right time. And that's become one of my favorite parts of directing the press, is finding students to get the most out of them.
Before we take a break, I'd like to ask each one of you
– yeah.
What has been the most surprising thing about this program so far for you?
Oh, man.
I know it's a hard question, but was there anything that surprised you that you went, boy, I didn't know I was going to have to do that, or I didn't know it was going to be like this?
I mean, it's not that I was not going to take the class very seriously, but I didn't understand the, like, distance that the press goes to put out these books and these titles. And everything that goes into it. It is such a surprising process, especially like how Dr. T had said. He kind of saw me walking around, and I've had a couple different classes with some professors that have had recommended me. And he came up to me and he's like, I want you to be the director of operations for the press. And I said, he kind of like told me a little bit about it. And it sounded really interesting. And I think that, like I said, the distance that the press goes to is it knows no bounds, and it is so surprising.
What about you, Tori? I'm putting you on the spot. I know.
I would be along the same lines as McKenna, just the vast amount of work that we actually do and how much of it is actually the responsibility of students in the class, how much of it isn't, you know, we need to get everything approved before we do it. It's, you know what you're doing, do it. So there's so much that is our responsibility. We have so much trust from Dr. Tangadol that, you know, really helps us actually be able to get things done.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, that is really cool, because that's like working at you've got a grown up job here.
Yeah.
I mean, and
this is
what you're doing, and you're still in school.
Yeah. It, like Dr. T said, he's very protective of us, and it's nice to have a professor that really believes in you and what you can do. And it is so inspiring to have a professor like that, that the press wouldn't operate without Dr. T.
Are you blushing? You're blushing.
Very. red as an apple.
Dr. Ross Tangadol, McKenna Rentmeester, and Tori Schuler from UWSP's Cornerstone Press, our guests today on Route 51 as we discuss the impact of the program on local students, local authors, and readers. When we return, we'll talk about the ways the program is preparing for students for a wide range of careers and a whole lot more. You can join the conversation at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, Dr. Ross Tangadol, McKenna Rentmeester, and Tori Schuler from UWSP's Cornerstone Press are our guests today. We'd love to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. So I was looking at the Cornerstone Press website, and it says that the press focuses on new voices and emerging scholars. So what does that mean? And I guess what's the importance of amplifying new voices?
Of course. Specifically thinking about our legacy series, we really look for those first-time authors in our application process. It is all about amplifying new voices and essentially, you know what I mean, as cheesy as it is, making people's dreams come true and giving rise to their new voices. Our new author that we have acquired, Joseph O'Malley, he is a phenomenal writer. He is an Iowa workshop writer. He has been writing for 25 years. He also has a career as a pharmacist, which is really cool. So he comes from a lot of different backgrounds, but he has published some of his stories in journals across the nation, among other things. But this will be his debut novel, and he is just as excited as we are, I think, about putting this out and being able to market his own work and put his own spin on it. And all of our legacy titles have actually been their first published novel, which is really, really cool, because we are able, like I said, to make people's dreams come true and give rise to those new voices and bring their work into the world and be able to distribute it, especially coming from students, I think is really cool.
How important is the emerging voices in your marketing?
It creates a really interesting side for marketing, because Joseph O'Malley, didn't really have much public image. Prior to...
no social media.
Right.
Really?
Okay. No social media.
Prior to the last couple months here, he did not have any social media accounts whatsoever. there was nothing about him on the internet. I mean, we were trying to figure out how to establish him, and we just did a quick Google search for him, and we looked through 8 to 10 pages of Google results and found one that was actually about him, even though he's been a published writer in a lot of journals at this point. He just really had no presence. So we had to...
Not an expert in personal branding then.
Right. No. So, I mean, we made a social media intro packet for him and sent that out to him. We're working on designing a website for him. So we're trying to help him, you know, market himself so that we can also help get his name out there. And that's been really great, actually. He's really taken to it.
His Instagram posts.
Yes,
yeah.
We
awesome.
Are getting so really? Much joy yeah. from looking at his Instagram posts. He's posting pictures of his coffee. And
he's very excited.
Yes, yeah, he's very excited about this, and that's so great. That's something that's really wonderful about working with new authors, how excited they are to be a part of this, because it's not, you know, run-of-the-mill for them. It is, just like McKenna said, making their dreams come true. This is something that they've worked so hard for. They've probably been submitting their manuscripts to a lot of different places for years, and we're the one who took them, and we're giving them so much dedicated attention.
Mm-hmm. That's an understatement, I feel like.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got 23 undergraduate students that are, you know, I mean, working tight. Like, we work around the clock. Mm-hmm. Although we, you know, on top of it, we all have full course loads and other organizations that we're a part of. And really, you know, I mean, going all in on one author for that point in time and giving their voice a chance to be heard it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Well, and I think, too, McKenna did mention novel a couple times. We actually, they're not novels.
Short story collections.
They're short story. Very good. All right. A teachable moment. Right? well, it's a great segue for the new voices. Mm-hmm. People write short stories. They've been writing short stories for centuries. America has a very strong tradition of short story writers. And we found in the last 3 years that of our many, many submissions, many novels, memoirs, many short story collections were starting to make their way to the top of the heap in terms of quality and voice. And so our last three Legacy Series titles have all been short story collections by first-time debut writers. Mm-hmm. So they published in journals, they published in magazines, they've done the hard work of writing for many, many years, and now here comes a book. But their first book is not a novel, which is what the market so desperately wants every writer to make a novel.
Yes, there's a lot of pressure for that.
It is a constant struggle to write bigger. Mm-hmm. Yet we have these short story collections that are so filled with wonderful theme and voice and ideas. And we've decided, sort of unofficially, that if we get really solid short story collections, we want to be the press that publishes them. We want to lean into the short story format instead of saying, well, it would be better if you sent us a novel instead of a collection. So that's part of our emerging voices, too. Emerging genre, the short story collection.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So tell me about what's coming up. I mean, you've got this book. Tell me about it and what else is in the queue.
Sure. So coming up actually November 19th, we have our Wisconsin Idea launch. And it is the second reprinting of the Wisconsin Idea that was first published in 1912 by Charles McCarthy.
Oh.
It is actually an academic title. And it was collected and annotated and edited all by students, obviously, of course, overseen by Dr. T and another professor of the English department, Professor Snowbarger. And that's actually coming out November 19th, and will be that launch on the UWSP campus. And we'll actually be launching a very special fundraiser that I've been working on. It's actually going to be kind of funded by donations from people who would like to donate to the press. And the press, on their behalf, will be able to send books out, and we want to put copies of the Wisconsin Idea in every public library across Wisconsin. So it's a very special fundraiser, and it's very near and dear to all of our hearts. And that's something that's coming up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the big launch at the end of the year will be happening on December 5th, and we will be launching Joseph O'Malley's Great Escapes from Detroit, his short story collection, which is his debut novel, as we've been kind of saying. Mm-hmm. But it's very special. It's a big event, and it will also be happening on the UWSP campus. And I think we're all very excited about it. It's coming up very quickly as we are submitting his final proof this week. So a big time crunch, but I think we're all very ready for it.
Yeah, and he'll be here for it. He'll be traveling from New York City. He lives in New York, born and raised in Detroit, though. And he writes very passionately about Detroit and about the suburban Detroit and about growing up there. And his stories are small marvels. He has such power and grace, which is hard. It's a hard combination sometimes to find. And he cares so much for his characters.
Another thing
that matters in a writer is I hope that they care about their characters. And boy, does Joseph really do that.
He does. Yeah. He does it a lot.
Wow. I'm excited to read it, actually, when it's finally published. When it's published, then is it sold in bookstores? How does that all work?
Yes. So we do have an Amazon storefront for people to be able to purchase online. So because we're not in all bookstores, we're an independent publisher. But we are doing a lot of outreach with bookstores, trying to get our books out more. That's something that our sales team has been working really actively on this semester, actually directly reaching out to bookstores, getting them catalogs of what we have available to be able to get things into bookstores for people to physically just pick up and see.
What about public libraries?
We have some in public libraries. I don't know how wide-reaching we are in that.
Yeah, and it depends on the relationships we have with specific libraries. That's another initiative, that will grow with the Wisconsin IDEA launch in particular, because we're going to grow those relationships with libraries, not just in Portage County or Marathon County, but outside of our central Wisconsin region. And that's why that fundraiser for the Wisconsin IDEA Project is going to be so important. It's going to get us into a different phase of the press's public relations and marketability. And if people are willing to donate to the press in order for us to put these books in every public library or every library in the state, currently McCarthy's book is in terrible disrepair. It was published in 1912, never reprinted. So if you go to your library and find the book, it will be falling apart. Now we have a brand new edition that students worked on, that they wrote annotations for, as McKenna said. And so this fundraiser will probably end up getting us to that next phase where we can start integrating that into more of our series titles, as a matter of fact. We've been working on a lot of different subscription initiatives, fundraising initiatives that Olivia and McKenna have been working on. So yeah, it's all connected in some way.
You brought up Amazon, and I'm curious if Amazon has complicated things for you as a publisher or helped you as a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amazon's a love-hate relationship, isn't it?
Dr. T is very passionate about this.
I think that we have to understand that we want to be in independent bookstores. That is the way it is. And so we are growing those relationships slowly but surely, right? However, Amazon is the only game in town when it comes to certain types of distribution or certain types of marketability. So we have to have an Amazon presence in order to move books. I would say it has been a positive experience, though, because we've been able to sell a lot more books because of that storefront, due to a number of issues with the way our press is composed and the way that our university systems sort of financial operations work. It's very difficult for us to have some sort of financial flexibility, PayPal or Square accounts or different points of sale. So because of those restrictions, we want to play ball. We don't want to be the problem child. We were able to secure an Amazon account. And because of that, and we can thank our chancellor for that opportunity, we have been able to grow the press, essentially. Yeah. So we don't want to rely solely on Amazon because there's an ethical issue there with independent publishing and with independent bookstores. We want to have relationships kind of with everybody. So yes, it's complicated, but I feel like we're able to manage it appropriately.
Do you sell ebooks too, or is that something that you think about? How does that work?
Sure. So we just were able to put together, since I've been here, we may have done ebooks prior to me getting here. I believe they worked on that a little bit. But we nearly sold out one of our titles, and we said, okay, now we're going to do a second printing, and we're going to do a new edition. We're going to kind of rebrand it with our new series titles, and we're going to make an ebook out of it. And so we did it. And so basically our ebook policy is that after a book makes it through its first run, which tends to be about 1,000 copies, we like to develop an ebook for that to be sold in different markets. So yeah.
Okay. I'd like to talk to you, the students, about what you think this is going to help you with in the future. How is this going to specifically help you in your future career? Like, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Well, that is the question, isn't it?
Yeah. It's still a question. I'm 51.
So when I am out of college, I'm actually not intending to go into anything publishing related. But I think this opportunity really just has helped a lot with a lot of business skills and a lot of the ability to work independently, but also to be a leader. So there's a lot of work that we all have to just, you know, take the initiative to do on our own because we know it needs to get done. And then a lot of work, you know, working with a team, either with our own team members that work with us or with people from other departments within the press. So I think those are skills that regardless of your career path, you're going to be able to take with you. I'm actually planning on going on to grad school and becoming a linguistics professor, but that's
really good for you.
Long way down the road and not at all publishing related.
No, but it's interesting that you can find pieces of this that are going to really matter in your future. McKenna, what about you?
So like I said before, I'm a communications media studies major. I would love to go into a news station. My dream would be to be an anchor on a news station. I also have the little girl dream of writing my own book someday. I have not yet tried to crack into that, but it'll be a future project. But the thing that the press has given me the most of is, delegating. I am definitely that person that likes to micromanage, and I sometimes do take on quite a bit to myself. And having a team that backs me up and is so great to work with is just the most – it's the best thing about the press, to be completely honest, is the people I get to work with and the friendships that have come out of it. I think me and Tori can both agree that we didn't know each other before this all started. We had no connection, and now I feel like we've become great friends. Mm-hmm. And – I think that's the connections that you're able to make. You know, the networking is so important now. And I think those are the greatest skills that I've gained apart from, my major courses in, working through this press. It is just a fantastic experience. And being able to go out and talk to, people of importance and being able to do it well and have people take you seriously, I think is the greatest thing I've gained from this.
Is it a confidence builder?
Absolutely. And also 100%. A lot. I think the majority of the people on the Cornerstone Press staff are also writers. Mm-hmm. Most of us write various things, a lot of short story writers on the staff. And I think working with the press has also helped us a lot to understand future goals for that. Mm-hmm. Looking at that one, it can be realistic to publish a short story collection instead of having to write a novel because, oh my gosh, the prospect of writing a novel is terrifying.
Isn't it, though? I know.
Yes, it's so much. But also looking at, the difference between self-publishing versus actually being published by a press.
Vast difference.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because, what's the value compared to self-publishing? It sounds like there's a big difference.
Oh, there absolutely is.
Look at your face. Well, I wish people could see your face.
Dr. T has some strong feelings about this.
I always tell writers that everyone's circumstances are different. Mm-hmm. Everyone writes for different reasons. There's great moments and opportunities where self-publishing makes sense, and it's good. Mm-hmm. But having a press that helps vet and make your work better, and you have people outside of you who make your work better, it cannot be a bad thing. And so my belief is that if students are willing to do this good work, people outside of the university should be willing to do the good work too. And sometimes it takes a long time to get something published. That's a good thing. We don't need instant gratification. Unfortunately, self-publishing presents us with that opportunity to get it right now. And for some, that might be okay. But for me and for my staff, we want those writers that have worked at it, that have pushed, and that they're ready to be vetted and turned into something bigger than themselves. And I think that's why it's important.
One final quick question. What do you see as the future of Cornerstone Press? Do you see it growing? More titles? More authors?
My dream for the press is that the university continues to embrace our model, that other universities across the system and potentially across the region embrace our model and try to do this with their students. I think there would be no greater there'd be no greater joy than if other universities decided to do this because they saw how one could be done and how well it could be done. In terms of amount of titles, I like the amount of titles we have. We're able to do them in a quality way. But boy, if we could get more folks to try this model, they would it would make a difference in their universities.
All right. Thank you. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Ross Tengedal, McKenna Rentmeester, and Tori Schuler from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point's Cornerstone Press. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Our producer and on-air producer today is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll host North Central Healthcare CEO Michael Loy for a discussion on significant changes at the institution and the role North Central plays in our region's community health. Until then, we're heading out of town.